This is a festive fortnight with Puja and now Dashera. So my best wishes to all of you and my felicitations. Also, this is the day of Dashera. So we political analysts look forward to the day of Dashera because one event, political event, happens on Dashera dutifully every year. And that is the address of the chief of the RSS, Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, who at this point is Mr. Mohan Bhagwat. So this speech is delivered essentially to RSS cadres in Nagpur at the RSS headquarters, but it's also a message to all those who follow RSS's ideology, that is the BJP. And also it gives you an idea of what's happening in the minds of what is, without a doubt, India's most powerful political organization, even if they call themselves purely cultural organization. But this is India's most powerful political organization because the government that runs India, majority government of the BJP, all its top leaders are RSS cadres. They've been trained in the RSS discipline and thinking. They treat the RSS as their guru, and they also see the reigning Sarsang Chalak of the RSS as the embodiment of that teacher or that guru. So we will go into his speech. I can say it at the outset that maybe this is not as headline worthy as speeches of the past, but maybe that is also the essence of this speech, and that is also what makes this much more significant politically. Because once you lift the layers in this speech, you see some very significant pointers. And what is cutting the clutter all about? It's about lifting the layers. Now, the most interesting thing in today's speech was that unlike the speeches until last year, this is not a speech that seemed like setting the agenda or giving a broad direction to the government of their shishyas or government of their pupils. In fact, strangely, this speech today harked back to two things. One, it was quite defensive in terms of explaining what the RSS is and what does it mean by saying Hindu, Hindutva, calling India a Hindu Rashtra. Now, every year, some of that happens. But I thought this year, it was the longest that he took in his 69-minute speech to explain this. It's almost as if there was a compulsion to explain, because there was also a big tribute paid to diversity. An explanation of what the RSS means by diversity, and also where it disagrees with some of the others who might have a different view. So, in my view, defensive, you can disagree, but I will tell you in as much honest detail as I could understand what he was trying to say. So, what he is saying is that what do we mean when we say ye Hindustan hai, Hindu Rashtra hai, jo bhi hai. So, he says that, look, we mean by Hindu Rashtra, Hindutva, Hindu, we don't define it in a narrow religious sense. So, you can be following any religion. This is a philosophical identity which subsumes all of India's philosophical thinking and evolution over centuries, since times immemorial, etc., etc. So, anybody who is a patriot, anybody who's proud of India, anybody who's proud of all things Indian, Indian culture, Indian values, and anybody who's proud of our ancestors in India, we think that he is united in a Hindu identity. You want to call it something else, you are welcome. We don't have a disagreement with you. You can call it something else. And then he goes on to, at great length, to explain his idea of diversity. And then he says diversity is like the fingers of your hand. All the fingers are not the same. A hand is not like your foot. Your face is not like your back. But all of them are parts of one body. They all constitute one body and they are essential to the body. Similarly is our concept of diversity. But we have disagreement with those who think diversity means separateness. And they think that because diversity means separateness, then you have things leading on to trouble from the RSS point of view. And he specifically mentions proselytization. that is religious conversion. So RSS is going back much closer to its fundamental ideas and questions and concerns, not worrying as much about current issues of governance as it used to. He says in the very beginning, in fact, he points out that Article 370 has been abolished or has been rendered inoperable. Also, that Ram Mandir is being built, and he's very careful in each case to say that even CAA, that all this went through the deliberative processes of Parliament and people debated it and passed it. There is, in fact, there is a lot of mention of the Constitution. He even says that if you read the preamble of the Constitution and the introduction to the Constitution, that pretty much underlines or explains the essence of true Hindutva as they see it. And he says you can again call it something else. So this kind of, I have taken 3 minutes explaining it. I think he took more than 10 minutes, 15 minutes explaining it. So this kind of detailed explanation, in my view, sounds almost a bit defensive, saying we are not bad people. We respect India's diversity. It's just that we call it Hindutva. If you don't like it, you call it something else. So this is not to do with religion. Now, this was quite significant. Then I know what will make headlines. What will make headlines, on the other hand, in the papers, I suspect, I could be wrong, but I've been there, I should have some idea, is what he said about China. Now, what he said about China, you would expect him to back the government of the day because it is their government. Although he did not talk about the government directly at any point, or the prime minister or anybody. So he said that China is now becoming a nuisance for the entire world. And he said, look, the pandemic happened. Now, a lot of people think that China has something to do with it. No evidence has come out, so he's careful not to offend China too much. He says not enough evidence has come out for us to know why this happened. But China's role is not above suspicion. Ye sandeh se pare nahi hai, ye nisandeh abhi nahi hai. Then he also says that coronavirus or the fight against the pandemic is taught every country to think of itself first. The exact expression he uses is apne rashtra ko aage karna. Now, all right, we know that the RSS does not like globalization. RSS's definition of nationalism is sharper, narrower than what the definition of nationalism in a globalized world ought to be, and what, to be very transparent, what I might want to believe in. So maybe I'll give you a little opinion here and there, but I will specify it. Then he said that the whole world knows that China is bullying them now, and everybody is reacting. So he names Taiwan, Japan, Vietnam, the US and India. And then he says the Chinese did what they did. Everybody knows, and they once again reminded us that China temperamentally is an expansionist power. He said, "Wo vistarvadi shakti hai, vistarvadi desh hai." So China is an expansionist power. But he says the Chinese were taken aback. His exact expression in Hindi is, "Chin sehem gya." Now, sehem gya may also sound like, in some translation, got scared. But I don't think that's what he means. He means China got stunned, or China got taken aback by the firmness that India showed. Again, his words, "Jaise Bharat uske aage tankar khada ho gaya." So the Chinese have been taken aback and they don't know what to do. The fact is that the Chinese economic and strategic calm has been disturbed by India's counter to China's policy. And then he said the rest of the world has also started scolding China now. Now, Chinese must have reasons of its own for behaving the way they do. But we now have to figure out how will the Chinese react to this new situation, because they've suffered an economic setback. They've faced a strategic challenge. Globally, there's a pushback against them. So they are unpredictable. We don't know how they will respond. We have to be prepared. He focuses on the neighborhood, India's neighborhood, and he says in the neighborhood and the world, and he comes back to the neighborhood then, in the neighborhood and the world, strategically, militarily, economically, and diplomatically, India will need to become bigger, stronger than China. That is the only solution. Obviously, that's not going to happen now. The only thing, I'm adding this, not he. The only thing that you see happening now where India will become China, become bigger than China, definitely in the next 10, 15 years or so, is in the size of the population. And that is not the one area where you want to be bigger than China, but all other areas, the gap is too much. So he's telling you, so obviously he's giving this government an agenda for the very long term. And then he says also that India needs better relations with its neighbors, and he names all the neighbors barring, no surprises, Pakistan. But again, a pleasant surprise, he names Bangladesh among them. So because there is a history of Bangladesh, Bangladeshis, infiltration, CAA, etc., etc. So he says Bangladesh, Nepal, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar, which he mentions as Brahmadesh. So in fact, if you want to know what is the meaning of Brahmadesh, you should look at the traditional maps of what the RSS sees as Greater India. There, Myanmar, which used to be called Brahma, is called as Brahmadesh. I'm not sure Myanmaris would appreciate it that much, but he calls it Brahmadesh. And he says these are countries and peoples with whom we've had relationships and ties culturally and otherwise for thousands of years. And there is need now to improve those. So I see significance in his mentioning Bangladesh there. And he says, look, we are not naive or weak. They should know it. But we need to improve our strength now in all the areas. It is when he talks about how to improve our strength that you get into problematic areas. And I told you that I will give you my opinion also. And this is where some opinion will come in. See, for example, it's okay where he says that preamble of the constitution and the introduction encompasses our view of Hindutva, and this is all a distillation of the thought on nation building and freedom movement that came up through various debates after 1857. In a sense, I would say there is nothing wrong with it, and you can argue with him on whether Hindutva is the right definition of Indian secular diverse nationalism or not. I don't think it is, but it's a healthy argument that you can have with him and the RSS. But then when he comes to agriculture, when he comes to the economy and those areas, there you start getting into problematic areas as I see them. Again, my opinion. So he says, for example, agriculture. In India, agriculture is very old, which is true. We taught the world agriculture, probably some parts of it. But he says, see, traditionally the Indian farmer never saw agriculture as a business. Indian farmer did not grow what he thought was the most profitable thing to grow. He did not work for profit. He saw it as a philosophical, spiritual pursuit to carry out, to fill the bellies of other people. And there you see almost a value judgment on farming for profit, which is problematic, because farmers should not have taken the theka to feed people forever without looking at better days or better times for himself, for his children. Why should the farmer be forced to do the same farming, grow grain, etc., etc., to feed people's bellies? The farmer should look at income enhancement, and that is the government policy also. Then he goes on to say that, see, our farmer has been so self-contained, so Swanirbhar or Atmanirbhar in his own right, that the farmer grows his own seed, so doesn't have to buy any seed. The farmer makes his own fertilizer, so doesn't have to buy any fertilizer. Even insecticides, pesticides, whatever the farmer needs, the farmer can make himself. India is the home of organic farming, which is now very fashionable in the world. So why don't we have more of that happening? Because, and then he says by implication, because he mentions that expression, farmer's suicide, he gives you the implication that if the farmer has to buy seed from outside, that means modern seeds, modern technologies, modern insecticides, modern pesticides, modern chemical fertilizers, that leads to bad economics, bad economic outcomes, or risky economic outcomes, and leading to farmers' suicides. So this is an idea of driving the farmer back where the farmer may have been 60, 70 years ago. The fact is, Satsang Chalak ji, with folded hands, that did not work for India. That is not working for India. That is when India came to ship-to-mouth existence. That's when India had famines. Modernization in agriculture, science in agriculture, is one of India's great gains of the 60s and early 70s. These should not be frittered away. In fact, India needs to build further on these. And I am quite happy that the government, Modi government, has now begun to move in that direction after the hesitations of NDA 1. Now, once again, the Satsang Chalak, and this is something that interests me greatly, he says that look at research, and I think he's referring particularly to seeds. He said, look at research. Corporates control research organizations, and then they present the outcome of the research in such a way as to suit their own interest. And when that happens, then it leads to profit. Profit for them, obviously he doesn't say so, but he implies to the detriment of the farmer. Now the reality is exactly the opposite. And once again, I am happy that Modi government is doing exactly the opposite. The new agricultural laws actually bring the corporates and the farmers closer together. They don't create a Chinese wall between the corporates and the farmers. So Modi government has figured out quite correctly, a bit late in the day, they wasted 5 years, but they've now figured out that the way forward for Indian agriculture is to make Indian farmer richer, to give Indian farmer more opportunities to earn more profits. And the way to do that is to make free markets, corporate markets accessible to Indian farmers, and to take out the intermediaries who then tend to cause a lot of bleeding or a lot of leakages in that pipeline. So once again, what the Satsang Chalak is saying has already been discounted fully by Modi government. And that's why I say that this is an uncharacteristic speech by Satsang Chalak, because in some of these areas, he is not speaking from a position of strength, because this train has already left the station for him. In fact, even on seats, he speaks the language of all the left-wing activists, left-wing xenophobic Luddite activists who have this fear of Monsanto and corporates and hybrid seeds, and also definitely GM seeds. The fact is that Modi government only recently has quietly allowed, after a long gap, has quietly allowed field trials of GM Brinjal seeds. It has also left no choice, because so much of that seed was now being brought in from Bangladesh and elsewhere, having proven so useful that Indian farmers were growing a lot of it anyway. And this variety has actually been developed by a public sector Indian organization, and Modi government has even given up the reservations the previous UPA government had. And they have turned the clock on that, because UPA government was driven by ideologues of the left. Modi government in NDA 1 was driven by ideologues of the right, that is the Swadeshis. Modi government has now taken a decision to break out of their sort of intellectual control, and that's a good thing. So once again, Satsang Chalak is talking about something. He's talking about a battle that essentially, ideologically, he has conceded to Modi government, because Modi government is their government. And Modi government is very powerful. And Modi government has given them Article 370. It's given them some elements of uniform civil code with triple talaq, etc. It's also given them the Ram Temple. So RSS has a lot to thank Modi government for. I don't think they are going to push the Modi government on these issues. And similarly, there are other platitudes. For example, he says that a country can become very rich if he grows sugarcane all over, converts everything into alcohol and exports liquor. But we should think about whether it's a good thing to become rich by selling liquor. And then he goes on to say that liquor is very bad. So all right, there's a spiritual side to him and DRSS. They can give you a sermon like that. And quotes the scriptures, and he says you should know that Lord Krishna's entire family was consumed by liquor. And then he says, and I can see the little helplessness, and I keep hearing that they are going to reverse the laws on prohibition. Now, only a couple of states in India have prohibition, Gujarat, Bihar, and some have a pretense of prohibition. And he almost shrugs his shoulder to say, you know, they are talking about reversing this, but you know, you should understand what is the consequence of this. Is sharab a good thing? So that's okay for a frugal, for somebody who believes in frugal living in a sort of ashram environment, these sermons are fine. But what is not fine is his larger message that a virtuous society has to be frugal, because he says coronavirus has taught us that we can do with much less than what we need. And he gives some good examples like marriages, that people spend, families spend so much money on marriages. Now you realize that you can do without it. I can guarantee to you, Sir Sanchalak, that once things become a little bit better, people will go right back to where they were, because we are all human beings. We are not people who dedicated our lives to the RSS or to any other organization, or who have sworn frugalism. We are not even Gandhian in that sense. This country is not that. When I say we, I mean we as in the large majority of Indians. Large majority of Indians are materialistic, they are ambitious, they are hungry for more, they are thirsty for more, and they are entrepreneurial. And they like to create wealth, and they like to enjoy it. And it's very important that they should keep doing that, otherwise this country will not go anywhere. And before I conclude, I will switch to something entirely different. We've all been following what's happening between Mumbai police and Arnab Goswami and his channel. So these are cases filed against, it seems like, every editorial staff member of Republic TV. The cases have been filed against a forgotten law. It is a 1922 law called Police Incitement to Disaffection Act 1922. And the charge is that the channel tried to create disaffection in Mumbai police or Maharashtra police. So let me just make a very short statement on this, and that's opinion. That answer to bad journalism is not police high-handedness. Answer to bad journalism lies somewhere else. If you start justifying police high-handedness, filing of these FIRs, and Maharashtra is not the only state that's doing it. UP is the champion in this. And I will share with you in today's links listing of many cases in many states, from Uttar Pradesh to Madhya Pradesh to Rajasthan to Himachal Pradesh, because all chief ministers are looking at each other and they know the power that their police has. And cases are being filed from sedition to UAPA for tweets, mere tweets, and also for spreading affection in the police for criticism of the police forces. Now, all bad precedents will be followed, repeated, and made worse by others. So the best thing is to not set bad precedents. This is a bad precedent, and in this case, Maharashtra police, Maharashtra government, Mumbai police needs to get off the curb, because nobody in the establishment has ever been able to intimidate the media successfully by using these methods. History tells us that. And in this case, Arnab Goswami and Republic TV are not even so helpless. They've had half of India's cabinet, president of the ruling party, all jump to their defense. So this is something which is self-defeating. Also, once again, the answer to bad journalism, no matter how bad it is, the answer to that is not bad policing or police high-handedness.